Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Is there a problem?
Yeah. Bigger than you can imagine.
Everybody, this is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is Season 9, Episode 17, Slipping Away. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Budding.
Oh boy. Hey, Sarah.
Hello.
Are you ready to talk about one of the five people of color on this show and how the show gets it wrong?
Sure.
All right. Let's start with our C plot then. Steve and Janet, interracial dating stuff. Not really a fair assessment. This is actually pretty serious, but let's get into it anyway. Steve and Janet are having lunch with an older couple. We will soon learn are Janet's parents, Michelle and Ben, which we could probably guess from her conservative outfit, which you can see in the visual aids. Ben is disgusted by the celebrity trash the Beat publishes, so good man, party on his side. Except it turns out they're talking about literal trash, which Steve has people go through to try to generate content. Janet keeps insisting that he's kidding, but Steve won't play along and just changes the subject to how great Janet is, even as she slaps his hand off her knee under the table. And he's about to say that they're dating until she cuts him off. And the subject changes back to the Beat's editorial standards or lack thereof as Steve gives Janet a judgmental squint. And back at the office, Steve's looking at a map of Star's homes and strategizing. So apparently they're not even hiring stringers for the garbage picking. They're doing it themselves. And Janet's still crabby after their lunch date because apparently she had wanted to go alone and Steve glommed on and she let him. Why does she keep letting him do this? It's the same thing with the camping trip.
Yeah.
Steve gets all pouty about her being embarrassed about her parents knowing she's dating him. He thinks it's because he's trifling, but it's actually because he's not Japanese, so her dad would not approve. And then Janet's poutily assisting Steve with the trash assignment, calling it an all-time low. Steve thinks that more accurately describes her hiding their relationship, but quickly gets out of his depth in clip two.
I told you my father's traditional.
Which is a daughter's way of saying your dad's a bigot.
Okay.
Not for you.
No.
Not for you, young man.
No. Can she make that assessment if she wanted to? Sure. That's within her purview to make. But yeah, no. A white person does not get to say that about a non-white person ever. Sorry.
No.
Janet just says he's not a bigot. He just wants to preserve his heritage because he feels like his culture is slipping away and has also arranged for Janet to meet someone tonight, in fact, for dinner, which Steve then stalks her to. Does not seem to be a dinner. It's like a matchmaker mixer for Asian singles or something. There's a bunch of people there is the point, and they're not having dinner. Janet claims she's just humoring her dad, and Steve is all in a tiz until Janet's date, he thinks, Peter, comes over to her. Unfortunately, in very stereotypical glasses, like he kind of looks like a racist cartoon. It's very unfortunate styling and would never happen today. I fucking hope.
Yeah, one hopes. But yeah, there my notes said, what is this long duck dong shorthand? Which,
yeah,
not good. Uh-uh. Not good, guys.
No. We can tell from Steve's face that he thinks he has nothing to worry about even before he basically says as much. But it turns out Steve is not competing with Peter. He's competing with Bob, a super hot Princeton grad who owns his own software company. So whoops. Sorry, Steve. Back at the office the next day, the trash picking continues without yielding anything of note. Two lines later, they're back to talking about Janet's dad and his preferences for her romantic life and the writer showing off that they remember things that happened last season in clip three.
You know, Jenna, you once told me that your father was a hippie and that he believed in free love.
Right. I lied.
thank God that was addressed directly, because my, like, the entirety of my notes about this stupid storyline were like, aren't her parents hippies? Why is this happening to us?
Yep.
Now we
know. Steve tries again, escalating from bigot to racist, which definitely not.
Still no.
Never. Janet once again just talks about shared values instead of why Steve's terminology is incorrect. Steve rhymes off a bunch of descriptors for himself. He's white. He runs a shitty tabloid. His mom's gay. He loves her. He loves the Three Stooges. And Janet tries to back up one, but he's dicking around doing Stooges material when Janet's dad shows up to talk to her about Bob within Steve's earshot. Janet agrees that Bob would be a great catch for her if she were looking for a boyfriend, but she isn't because she already has one, though she stops short of saying who. Presumably he can figure it out. The next morning, Janet wakes up morosely next to Steve. For what it's worth, he says he's proud of her, and she just says she doesn't have any clean underwear there, so she has to go home. Janet says maybe her father won't be there, but she's pretty sure... Steve says maybe her father won't be there, but she's pretty sure he will after she was out all night. So this is where we establish she lives with her parents, which I'm very sure she's made mention at some point of a roommate.
Yeah. And are her parents, like, visiting?
Yeah.
Because isn't she from Seattle or something?
Oh, is she? Maybe.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just making shit up. I mean, writers do it all the time. Why shouldn't I? But yeah,
Well, no, they're not visiting because they establish in the next scene with them, like, that he's kicking her out.
Right. But I just assumed that he was paying for,
like,
he owned where she was living, but doesn't live there himself.
Okay, maybe. Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
Anyways, right. Steve tries to comfort her in clip 4.
If it's any consolation, I'm really proud of you. It's going to be okay, Janet.
Please stop letting him use that baby voice. It's creepy and weird. Thank you. Management.
Janet wants to get back to Steve saying he loves her, because if he wants to take it back, now's the time, but he doesn't. Also, just to back up one more time to where he said her dad was racist. Steve's dad is Rush Sanders. Like, we've said a lot of nice things about Rush over the years, but I feel fairly confident he says some real off-color stuff on the golf course, and maybe Steve should shut up for that reason alone. Like, let's not compare whose dad is more racist.
One of those dads who's like, you know, that nice Oriental girl. Like, Dad, it's Asian, and she's 32. Like, please stop that.
Totally. So Janet reports later on her talk with her dad, whom I guess she lives with, as I said, which at least explains how she can afford to work at the beat for no money or benefits. But the upshot is her dad won't let her live in this place either with her or on his dime if she's dating Steve. And Steve is so sorry. But I guess there's always room at the Walsh house. I don't know. That's where we leave it for today. Moving on to the B plot. Gina's empty trust fund doesn't distract her from messing with Donna and Noah. In his dumb radio booth, David is trying to talk Donna into dating him again. Wisely, she points to the multiple times they have tried and failed as a couple, but is very flirty even as she recounts all of her bad recent decisions, like going to the party with him and going on a show and kissing him. She just thinks they're going through some tough times now, not that they are destined or something. He tries to get her agree to one date. She's even more flirtatiously considering it when she looks out to see Noah staring through the glass at her with his dumbest expression, which is saying something. So then she declines David's invitation. When she gets out on the floor, she has to dodge Noah's attempts to have one drink with her and then to ask her if she dumped him for someone else. And she doesn't do herself any favors by failing to answer and then looking over her shoulder his shoulder at David. Noah still thinks they broke up over nothing, so she has to remind him that the something they broke up over is his violation of her trust. This time. Again, let's not relitigate this. Apparently, everything's fine between Gina and Donna now, as they discuss Gina's plans to open her own gym with funds borrowed against her trust fund. Donna is surprised to learn that she has one. Apparently, she was paid exhibition fees during her youth skating career, and they were put in trust for her. Her mother is coming over with the paperwork, and Donna very gauchely asks how much it is. And Gina has an answer already in clip 5.
Well, not by Beverly Hills standards, but I did okay for trash.
Gina, we've been over this. I never should have said that.
But you did.
Well, I was upset about you and Noah.
Donna, there is no me and Noah.
I know, but you need to understand that the way that it looked and what I thought happened, I'm going to need a little bit of time to get over that.
Yeah, maybe Gina's going to need a little bit of time to get over her blood calling her trash. Like, that's harsh.
Yeah.
Anyway, the doorbell rings. It's Gina's mom, Bobby. Not as fat as she was in her youth, apparently, because if this lady is 150 pounds, I would be shocked. But I guess we're supposed to think this figure is relatively new, as Donna says she looks great. Bobby says after another 10 pounds, she'll match the number on her driver's license. Relatable. Bobby starts gasping about how cute the apartment is, which Gina can tell is a distraction from the fact that she doesn't have the paperwork with her. But she remembers the name of the bank where it was opened, and Donna's dad has a couple of accounts there, so she'll take Gina later. Gina meets Donna at the Peach Pit to remind her about the bank, but catches her in the middle of spying on David at a nearby table with some broad. He brings her over to introduce her. She's a celebrity sex columnist named Deborah Fowler. The station is pairing them up for a show. Poor Deborah, RIP, a professional reputation. So she says goodbye with an extremely chaste and dry cheek kiss for David, and Donna seizes up. But because Gina's there, Donna has to speak to David in code in Clipsix.
You know the thing that you asked me to do last night?
That thing?
You know, the thing that you asked me to do that I said I couldn't do?
The thing you couldn't do? The thing? Yeah, 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 what about it?
Well, as it turns out, I can't.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Good.
Good.
Okay.
All right.
He asked you on a date. Why are you making it seem like he wanted you to eat his ass? Like, it's so strange.
I know. It's so weird. Like, I am now prepared to do butt stuff. Okay. And then there's like the yakety sax in the background at the Peach Pit. Like, guys, have a bake sale and build another set. Please.
And yet, Clip 7.
You're going out on a date with Donna?
How did Gina piece this together from what was actually said? Get this woman a job breaking codes at the NSA.
Well, A, they're being super obvious. And B, the pinch the bridge of his nose blocking is back.
Oh, yeah.
Quote, right. Yay, end quote.
So David denies it for a couple of seconds before admitting that it's true, and Gina says it's fine, weirdly adding it's not like he's planning Noah's overthrow. Like, what does that even mean? Donna already dumped Noah. He admits that they kissed, and Gina is way too excited to hear about it. So for some reason, Gina's gone to see about her trust account, A, without the paperwork that one would assume she needs, and B, with Donna, who has nothing to do with it. Gina knows she can't have the money until she's 25, but she wants to know how much there is so she can use it as collateral for her gym loan. Her guess is that there's probably about $75,000 in there, but she's way off. It's $14,000 and change. And Donna idiotically tells this woman to check again, like that episode of The Office where Michael keeps asking the guy to run the numbers, whatever that means. So the bank officer turns her monitor around to show them what she's looking at. And Gina gets more anxious as she says she knows the principal should be around $60,000 and should have made something through investments. And the officer is super condescending, saying that if there were ever that kind of money in the account, it's not there now. So Gina manages to get her mother back to the apartment to confront her, as though Bobby wouldn't have started ghosting Gina immediately. But also, we will later find out she's there early enough for Donna not to have opened the store yet, which I doubt, like, that she hauled her ass over there at like 6:30. But she claims she spent the money on Gina's career needs, like coaches and costumes and travel. And Donna and her very stupid double pigtails, quad pigtails, which you can see in the visual aids, try to mediate in clip 8.
Gina understands that, but there are some additional expenses.
Yeah, additional. What's this? Well, you had to remodel the master bath in 93? You had to, right? You had to get a 94 Ford Explorer, Mom, a dishwasher, a TV. Here you go. New life for you.
Okay, what is this paperwork that Gina has acquired that has all the details of Bobby's spending?
Yeah. And if it has those details, why didn't it say on the monitor at the bank how right. much money had historically been in it?
Right.
Learn how accounting works.
Yeah. Please. It's not like if Bobby was stealing from the account, she would have to come in and be like, it's for a dishwasher. Like, the bank doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
But Bobby plays the martyr, saying that she gave up her life for Gina, and whatever she got in return, she more than paid for. But Gina's not having it, saying that Bobby robbed her of her childhood and has now taken her money, and she won't get her childhood back, but she better get the money. So Donna and Matt and Gina go to see Matt, but he's not in his office for reasons that will be obvious when we get to the A-plot. Noah is loitering outside the store with flowers for Donna, who declines to take them. Noah rebuffs Gina's attempts to talk to him until she manages to say that Donna and David kissed before Donna and Noah broke up. Noah doesn't believe her at first, but she pretty quickly convinces him, and he storms in to yell at Donna about it and call her a hypocrite, which she is, but also fuck Noah, who cares? And then Noah waits until the next day to storm over to David's house and scream in his face about all this. And that night we find out that Matt did get involved in Gina's trust off screen as Donna recaps to David over dinner in clip 9.
So who's the trustee?
Gina doesn't know, but according to Matt, it's probably the bank.
Well, the bank's responsible for how the money's spent.
Or misspent. So even though Bobby was irresponsible...
The bank's on the line to pay her back, and since the bank has conveniently deep pockets, she should get her money back.
And more. I scored some amazing stones.
All right, I'm just going to have you do one, but both of you, one thing... That would be in the sci-fi short story, Flowers for Donna.
A drug that temporarily makes you smarter than a dumb baby. But then it wears off.
Oh, yay!
A mouse named Rocky.
That lives in a cleavern?
Yes.
All right, back to the trust. Bullshit. To all of this. This is not how trust funds work.
Like, oh, you're the person who spent it on a dishwasher was wrong to do so. We'll just cover that.
Yeah.
No.
If the bank were the trustee, which I don't know how that would work, but they would have enough oversight that this would not happen to put them on the hook for any of this in the future. Like, if Bobby had signing authority, she had signing authority. The end. It's her responsibility.
Yeah.
Dumb. Anyway, they then go on discussing Noah's vengeance, which apparently includes canceling David's show with Donna. Back to a whole other line of bullshit. Noah has control over radio station programming just because of where the booth is. Like, it's a show David does for a radio station that's operated out of some college. Presumably there are recording and broadcasting facilities there. Just go there and do your show. Like, what? So dumb.
What?
Anyway, somehow Donna defends Noah's right to be upset because of their deception. Shut up, Donna. David wants to focus on their being together, not Noah being alone. And of course, Donna whines that she feels bad because Noah's a good guy. No, he's not. And she loves him. No, she doesn't. And she catches herself and then says she's sorry to David some more. She's paying her bill at the Peach Pit the next day when David comes in, and they're super awkward at first, but agree their date was nice. And the way they're talking around the subject, I can't tell if we're supposed to think they fucked.
Yeah, I had care. The same question.
Yeah. Maybe it was set to a song they couldn't clear. Who knows? She says she has a lot to work out with Noah. No, you don't. You broke up. And David says he knows instead of no, she actually doesn't. And
well,
Donna's
and
in the
Noah's
parking lot.
Noah's very busy trying to poop a hedgehog, as is evident in every single screenshot that I took of him. They were myriad. He really is like, he is the hointiest. It's amusing to me.
So Donna's in the parking lot about to leave when Noah pulls up. She tells him he was right to call her a hypocrite, which he is ungracious about. She tells him the whole story about the first kiss, but not the second one. And he asks where this leaves them, and she says she doesn't know. Yes, you do. You fucking broke up. I feel like I'm taking crazy pills. So Donna comes home to find Gina no closer to finding out who the trustee is, even though Bobby is in the room. Is in her room. She didn't ask her as soon as Bobby showed up or on the phone after this meeting, whatever. Gina's nervous about confronting Bobby and asks Donna to back her up. And Donna weirdly says she's glad the stuff with her mom has brought the two of them closer together, which is rude. But Gina says she's glad Donna feels that way instead of agreeing. So in they go. Clip 10.
For 1 second, Mom, I'm going to forget everything you've done to me, and I just want you to tell me who the trustee is.
No, you don't.
Well, we've been told that the trustee is the person who's legally responsible for how the money was spent.
Yeah, the person who was supposed to be looking out for my best interests. I mean, I would really love to know who this genius is.
Please, Gina, don't ask me that.
Mom, just tell me who it is. I don't understand. I mean, either way, I'm going to go after them for pain and suffering.
Please.
Sorry, I don't get it. Why are you protecting this person?
Because it's your mother.
What?
The trustee, the person that you're thinking of suing to get your money back, it's Aunt Felice.
Why are they saying this as if it's bad? Felice has $60,000. Problem solved.
Yeah.
I mean, I gather there's more to it than this, but anyway.
Oh, there is. And it's really fucking stupid.
I vaguely remember, but yeah, we'll get to
it. We will get to it at the speed of continental drift.
Great.
Eventually.
On to the A plot. Dylan and Kelly make a run for the border for Lauren's meds. We get some great B-roll of the drugstore that just says drugs. Huge block letters outside, which I love. That's where I would go for all my drugs too. Matt and a blown out Lauren with straight hair show up at a drugstore to try to refill her clozapine. Lauren is squirrely as hell as Matt tries to Jedi mind trick the pharmacist into refilling a prescription with no refills available. Duh, it doesn't work. But then the idiot pharmacist just leaves the supply bottle of clozapine out on the counter before going into the back again, and Matt swipes it and runs out. Even if this happened, there would 100% be CC cameras on this, so like it would only work for a second. But
yeah, nice job, lawyer guy.
Plus, they just get stopped by the security guard before they've taken 4 steps anyway, so... poorly thought out plan. Matt is blurring lines like a motherfucker as he meets Kelly for Java in the courtyard to tell her what's going on with Lauren's clozapine. And Kelly brings up her job at the clinic to say she knew 2 patients then who got their meds in Mexico. Matt is not so sure that's the right path for him and Lauren, but he's already starting to see flashes of Lauren's illness recurring, and Kelly thinks there's something she could do. And when we see her next, she's having coffee with Dylan to see if he wants to bankroll her clozapine smuggling operation. He's trying to turn this into
something. Oh, I'm sorry. Do you not have any money left after you bought him a car?
Yeah, I thought it was going to turn out that they were going to fly again. But no, they just drive. So, like, drive yourself. Anyway, he's trying to turn this into something romantic with her when Gina shows up to ask him to dinner. I guess they made their peace after the car theft. This is also the first that we've seen her since she found out about her trust fund. And she seemed to be, she's in a perfectly fine mood, like isn't upset about it. Like, I know we're doing this on this podcast in the wrong order, but like, this is in the middle of the story and she is showing no signs that she's anxious about it at all.
Right.
Anyway, Dylan says it's a bad time, which is when Gina sees that Kelly's there and asks what's going on. And they tell her the truth, and she focuses on the going to Mexico part and gets all wounded about it. And Dylan says they're done now, so he could go eat after all, but Gina's lost her appetite. And all the Walsh House guys wake up in the middle of the night to loud music in the living room. It's Lauren sitting in front of the stereo, seeming confused, in clip 11.
Sorry, I didn't mean to wake you guys up.
That's all right, it's okay.
I couldn't... find the earphones.
It's okay, Lauren. It's okay. It's okay.
You always play your music that loud?
Of course not. Could you find me the headphones, please?
Sure. I needed to drown out the voices.
Voices?
Could you get me the damn headphones?
I got it.
Okay. Okay, come here. Sit down. Come on. Sit down.
The voices, Steve. The ones that are telling her she's a descendant of Queen Elizabeth. The ones telling her if she looks at the face of anyone pictured on the cover of Time magazine, she's going to die. The ones telling her to walk to the nearest freeway and face oncoming traffic. See, they're whispers now, so she throws on the headphones, she can drown them out, but, see, they become voices, and then they're commands, and then it's just, they're unavoidable.
Again, put her on a different drug. What the fuck?
Yeah. Or, I don't know, thumb through a DSM and realize that these symptoms correspond to nothing. that anyone has ever suffered from. So give her some Tic Tacs, because this is all horseshit. This is not how any of this works. It's insulting. Also, she just got here and we don't care.
This feels the symptoms are what the voices are telling her feels like. You know, when on a sitcom or something, when the writers need to come up with like a list of jokes, joke answers to something, or like on The Good Place, like the million pun business names, like you can tell people really enjoy coming up with these. This feels like that, except they're talking about someone with schizophrenia and it's in very poor taste.
Yes, agree.
Apparently later that day, Kelly and Dylan are lording around Tijuana waiting for Kelly's contact to get in touch. And there's a Chiron that says where they are. But for the blind, there's also this clip 12.
Oh, my God. We get it. They're in France. Jesus. Just kidding.
I'm an idiot.
Maybe this is just because I finished reading a Harlequin romance novel from 1986 that was set partly at Epcot Center, but that sounds exactly like the Mexico Pavilion at the World Showcase in Epcot to me.
Mm, yeah.
So since they have nothing else to do, Kelly decides to be weird in clip 13.
Thank you for coming down here with me. It means a lot.
Well, when I get my miracle second chance, you do the same for me.
Considering why we're down here, do you still think that Matt and Lauren's second chance is so miraculous?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you would want Antonia back, even if you knew you had to give her up again?
Make no mistakes, Kel. I would do anything to get Antonia back. I mean, knowing that there's an end, you, allows you to orchestrate and say the things you always wanted to say. Wouldn't you want that?
Who?
With somebody that you once loved. It meant a lot to you, and then for whatever reason just wasn't there anymore.
You know, like your dead grandpa. This is so dumb.
I mean, like, you know, I have to say Luke Perry actually does a pretty good job.
He does, for sure.
And
he
there is actually a moment, which will be in the visual aids, that I was like, all right, I'm not made of stone, but the stick insect is actually looking pretty foxy right here. It's mostly because he's like rolling his eyes and laughing at Kelly.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's having a good little run here.
Yes. But she is being ridiculous. Like,
yeah.
It's like she's got to be 23 at this point. Are we supposed to think she has never experienced bereavement in her life? Like, her grandfather aside, she's lost people. Like, of course, if you could have someone back, you would, even if you knew that it was only going to be temporary. Like, this is such a dumb question to ask of any human.
Adult.
It's like
she's
an alien.
Yeah.
Anyway, later in her motel room, Kelly says she called Matt to tell him they crapped out on her connection and further tells Dylan she doesn't think she can do this. And he tells her not to decide anything until tomorrow. And also that if she needs anything other than the supplies he's just delivered, he's across the hall. Hint. But he can't even get out of the room before Kelly is saying that things feel different between them now than the last time. And they start making out. And the next morning, she drags him out of bed because she's ready to go home. Empty hands or no, because now she thinks it's wrong to fuck him or to get Lauren drugs she's not prescribed.
I don't. Both? No, I don't know.
Dylan tells her she can't cheat on Matt because he's married. True. And as for Gina, he'll repent, he says. So Gina in her new car, it's no longer the red BMW convertible. It's a blue Saab convertible, in case you're writing a book. I don't know. They drive Dylan over the border, acting visibly nervous with the customs agent. And Dylan does a whole bit about how she doesn't want to declare that they boned last night until the customs guy tells them to get lost. Relatable also. Kelly asks what that was all about. And Dylan says he was trying to prevent the search that was about to happen. Kelly says it wouldn't matter since they didn't smuggle anything. But Dylan has a bottle of clozapine in his tiny jeans, which he shows her for like 3 feet from the guy in the booth.
I don't think he was wearing underpants either. So do everybody a flavor and Purell those before he gives them to Lauren.
Yeah. So he arranged this acquisition behind her back because he knew she wouldn't approve. And his whole speech to the border guard about the feelings stirred up by their fucking was just for that guy's benefit. What a relief to Kelly, who does not want to get back together with Dylan at all. Cough. So Matt comes home late from court to a bedraggled Lauren listening to loud music on her headphones. After they've hugged and discussed his stressful day, Dylan and Kelly show up to hand off the pills. Lauren is emotional about having more time to spend with Matt, and everyone is sad about the implications. And the next day, Kelly stops Gina on her way out of the apartment to say it was wrong of her to ask Dylan to go to Mexico with her. Gina just stares at her, so Kelly keeps talking in clip 14.
We got the drugs. Oh. What, to kill the competition? I mean, what do you want me to do, say congratulations?
Hi.
Hey, I'm leaving.
Oh, I was just coming to see you.
Sorry to disappoint you.
She didn't look sorry.
Are you going to tell her what happened?
No. You gonna tell Matt?
I should, but no.
Why should you?
He's with his wife!
Who you just arranged to kill, Virginia.
Good job, Kelly.
Yeah. Anyway, both of you shut up. Speaking of Matt, he finds Lauren in their room contemplating the pills. Having something to look forward to makes life worth living. But then she just takes the bottle and tosses it in the trash. People broke international law to get you those, but sure. She's not sure it's what she wants, but it's what she's going to do. Matt says they'll move back to New York. He'll get a job there. He'll open his own solo practice again, you mean? Who knows? Did he pass the bar in New York? Don't know. Anyway, it's so he can watch over her as much as possible. And she's breathlessly grateful and hugs him. But once again, he does not look so sure. And Kelly arrives at the Walsh house after a call from Lauren, who starts by thanking her for what she did and getting a beatific smile from St. Kelly for it. And then she says she isn't going to take the clozapine, knowing the consequences. Someday there will be a cure for schizophrenia and she wants to be alive to take it. Oh, Lauren. Wow. Maybe there will. I don't think you'll be alive for it. But anyway, Lauren tells Kelly to take care of Matt. Watch over him, make him happy, because Lauren knows Matt loves Kelly. Kelly says he also loves Lauren, but Lauren repeats a request that Kelly look after him. And he walks in just on the end of Lauren's prompt to Kelly, and Kelly just saying, of course, I will, and leaving before Matt can ask what they were talking about. When she's gone, Lauren fills him in on her plan to leave without him because she knows he doesn't really want to go. That's where we leave it for them. How convenient.
I think we never see her again.
I mean, probably not, because she's going to be back in that institution being unmedicated and having weird fantasies and no one to look after her.
Because it's the 1820s. Yeah. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's it. Episode MVP. Dylan, who actually did something that might have been what Lauren wanted, whether she decided to continue taking it or not.
The border guard for facilitating that and also for having none of Dylan Kelly's stupid on again, off again, whatever.
That's fair. Least valuable player. David's station manager who did not step in and tell Noah he can't actually cancel a show on his radio station.
The music coordinator. Just put a chyron. It's not that fucking difficult.
Let's do the Kim challenge.
Bad, bad, and dangerous to me.
Five ways from this episode that Dylan proves he is mad, bad, and dangerous to know. Well, it's dangerous to smuggle drugs over an international border. We know that.
It's bad to just put them in your kit with no boxers or a Ziploc or anything between medication and pubes.
It's potentially dangerous to just take loose gum from a child in a developing nation with questionable public sanitation, which Dylan also does when they're in Tijuana.
Oh yeah, Chicle. I wouldn't do that. You're right.
Nope.
It's bad to fuck Kelly. It's just bad. And it's mad.
Yeah. And as we know from Noah's example, it's dangerous to cross Gina. So good luck with whatever revenge she has planned for you, buddy.
Yeah.
That makes five.
All right, friends. and enemies. Now we reach the conclusion of Luke Perry, teen heartthrob, but there may be some pertinent information in here for all of us.
Oh.
All right. We resume talking about Luke and his fans. Luke enjoys meeting his fans and is glad that they want to see him. He gets upset, though, when fans get out of control. That is one reason he enjoys doing things with Jason and Ian. If the three get recognized, Luke said, at least there is safety in numbers.
Okay.
I'm going to try to get through the next sentence without giggling. I'm not sure I could do it. Since he takes his acting seriously, there seems to be nothing Luke can't do. He has signed a 2-picture movie deal with 20th Century Fox Studios. In April 1992, Luke's first film was rumored to be about a rodeo star.
Oh, sure.
Any movies he does make, however, will be done when 90210 is on break. Thank you for that. Then on the facing page, we have a very moody shot of Perry brooding with the caption, Luke Perry, comma, takes his acting seriously. Not so the copy editor. Will Luke ever leave Beverly Hills 90210? That's really? Not likely.
Oh!
I'll stay as long as they'll have me, Luke said. I really love it, and I'll stay on the show as long as they tell me to keep coming back. And now we have another huge subhead. Luke Perry's address. You can write to Luke Perry at Luke Perry, Beverly Hills 90210, Fox TV, 10201 West Pico Boulevard, Los Angeles, California, 90035. So listeners, if you want to see what happens, if you just send a postcard, go for it. Once again, that's 10201 West Pico, PICO Boulevard, LACA, 90035. And the last line of the book, if you want to receive a reply, enclose a self-addressed stamped envelope, LOL.
We should do this, Sarah, and see what happens.
I think we should. And I think we should ask. I'm going to enclose like an 8x11 manila envelope and ask for a signed photo.
Of course.
And just see.
Yeah.
What happens? Thank you for this, Edison Elementary Library, for purging yourself of this tome. Other Reaching for the Stars books include Fred Savage, New Kids, Michael Jackson, Roseanne, MC Hammer, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Amy Grant.
Wow.
And Neil Patrick
Harris. Sounds like one weird dinner party.
All right. Yeah. I got a quiz for you.
Okay.
Did that rodeo film ever get made? And yeah. B, yes, it did. What was it called?
8mm. No, 8mm. No, 8 seconds.
8 seconds.
8mm, something very different.
Jennifer 8. We're going to get this. I swear to God.
Which I've never seen.
What was his first couple movies out of the gate after 90210? There's a big one.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Those are the two, right? Those are the two pictures.
Terminal Bliss in 90, Scorchers in 91.
Those are
Buffy
in
92. And then 8 seconds in 94. And let's not forget, from 94 to 95, he was the voice of Napoleon Bree in Biker Mice from Mars, the TV series.
Oh, sure.
Yes.
I had a nickel. Next time on Again With This, Dylan doesn't know who saved his life. David doesn't know what a bad look it is to use his radio show as a personal service. We didn't know Matt had enough backbone to blackmail a prosecutor. And Kelly doesn't know whether to be with Doormat or Captain Stick Insect. You won't know whether to shit or go blind when you get a load of our visual aids for this and every other Again With This episode. Those are on our website at previously.tv. Follow our website on Twitter at PreviouslyTV, and please follow this podcast on Twitter at AWT90210. I'm trashy trustee Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is hard rock resistant auditory hallucination Tara Ariano, and she is on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And leave us not forget our producer, crotch meds, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Hi. You know what to do after the beeparoonie.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Buying a car in Carvana was so easy. I was able to finance it through them.
Whoa, wait, you mean finance?
Yeah, finance. Got pre-qualified for a Carvana auto loan, entered my terms, and shopped from thousands of great car options all within my budget.
That's cool that financing through Carvana was so easy.
Financed. Done. And I get to pick up my car from their Carvana vending machine tomorrow.
Financed.
Right, that's what I said.
You can spend time trying to pronounce financing, or you can actually finance and buy your car today on
Carvana.
Financing subject to credit approval. Additional terms and conditions may apply.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.